Welcome to the AECI Plant Health Podcast, where we have conversations that help you unlock nature's potential.
I'm your host, Octave Espandil. This is an episode not to be missed as Dr. André Sawyers dives into the concept of the food soil web and its importance for sustainable agriculture. André, welcome to Farmers Inside Track. It's absolutely amazing to have you with us. What are the ideal characteristics of good soil structure for optimal growth?
Hello, Octavia. Yes, soil health has three main components, which I'm going to speak about. The first one is soil structure, the second one is soil chemistry, and the third one is soil biology. Now, we'll be looking at each of those separately. So, good soil structure is essential for optimum growth of plants because it affects so many different components like water retention of the soil, aeration, which is very important for microbial growth and so on, root development. So the ideal characteristics of a good soil structure include several things. Firstly, we look at well-structured aggregates. So aggregates are the clumps of the soil held together by organic matter and roots and fungal life and so on. So you want well-structured aggregates in your soil to begin with. The next point, I suppose, would be good porosity, which means the structure between the soil particles, which allow decent drainage and allow excess water to actually move through the soil profile down to the roots and so on. So a good soil porosity is extremely important. Water holding capacity is also important. You know, while drainage is, of course, critical that you don't have waterlogged soils, you do need good water holding capacity. So you want the soil to still hold water for the plant to be able to access water. Nutrient availability, we'll talk a bit more about that just now with soil chemistry as well. That's about having nutrients available for the plant, which can be released for uptake. We all know that plants require nutrients and chemistry from the soil to be taken up. You want adequate nutrient availability from the soil as well. High organic matter content is also important. And by that, we'll be talking a lot about organic matter content. And that's got to do with carbon content in the soil. And organic matter is also a form of sort of slowly available nutrition as well. And it encourages microbial activity. And of course, going with that, you need a balanced pH. That's the acidity and the alkalinity of soil. That can be determined by various things. And what one needs ideally, we'll speak about that a little later too, is a pH of around 6.5, soil pH of 6.5. That is your ideal pH for optimum nutrient uptake, the different nutrients that one finds in the soil, which we'll talk about just now too. 6.5 is the ideal pH for that. And it's important that you have that correct pH. That can be corrected with liming. If you've got a soil that's acid, pH is very low and you need to pick that pH up. You can do liming, which will lift the pH and get it closer to the 6.5 mark. If you've got soils that are too alkaline and you need them to be acid, you can actually add something like sulfur, which will then bring the pH down from high values down to closer to, well, more acidic. So overall, good soil structure promotes healthy root development, efficient nutrient uptake, and optimum water management, which are critical for optimum plant growth.
How do different agricultural practices like tillage methods and cover cropping impact soil structure?
Different agricultural practices have various effects on soil structure, and this is how tilling actually affects the soil structure. Practices like tillage and cover cropping have significant impacts. We'll talk about that a little bit later too. Conventional tillage can degrade the soil over time. It breaks down your soil structure. It breaks down your aggregates, which you spoke about earlier, which are so important for soil structure. A cover cropping can actually increase your organic matter as well and improve root penetration and loosen the soil up effectively and, of course, control erosion. There's excess water, you get runoff, we get erosion, we don't want that either. It can also promote nutrient cycling. That's cover crops we're talking about there. So overall, if one adopts conservation-minded practices, it can contribute significantly to the maintenance of your soil structure and your agricultural systems, which you're busy implementing.
Can you describe some practical strategies for improving soil structure in degraded agricultural lands?
Yes, Octavia, there are a few things we can do. Of course, we need to look after our soils, and improving soil structure in degraded agricultural lands is crucial for restoring fertility, enhanced water retention, promotion of crop health, and so on. There are a few practical ways we can do this, and one of them is to reduce the tillage. That's the working of the soil. We talk about plowing and harrowing and all of these sort of agricultural practices that are used. If one can minimize those or, in many cases, of course, eliminate them completely, which is often not possible, but such practices can improve your soil structure over time. Cover cropping, we spoke about that earlier on as well, and that's an important thing. You can increase your organic matter content. It does improve soil structure, penetration of roots. Your biology in your soil can be increased. Soil porosity can be increased. So cover crop, which many farmers do use, can and cannot work in some cases, but that can also improve your soil structure. Crop rotation is well known to everybody. That's very important when it comes to disease cycles and pests and so on, and nutrient cycling, of course. So diverse crop rotation systems would increase your organic matter and, of course, improve the structure of your soil. Incorporating organic matter, and we've spoken a bit about organic matter, and we'll speak more about it later. If one adds organic matter to your soil in the form of compost or manure or crop residues or such type of plant material, you improve your soil structure as well. Organic matter improves the soil structure by promoting the formation of stable aggregates. We spoke about those earlier on, and enhancing water retention. So the more organic matter you have in your soil, the more water retention you'll have, and better water retention, which is, of course, critical for the uptake of the plant. You can use soil amendments like gypsum. We spoke about gypsum and lime, which can change the pH for you, or adjust the pH, or move it in a certain direction. These amendments can modify the soil properties and create a more suitable environment for root growth and microbial activity. Conservation practices, these are being implemented more and more. It's like contour farming, terracing, grassed waterways, reduced soil erosion, and so on. These can improve soil structure over time as well and reduce water runoff. Soil compaction is something that we'll speak about as well. That's an important factor of soil structure. Compaction obviously reduces the penetration of water into the soil. So one should try to avoid traffic, if one could put it that way, especially during wet conditions, over your soil, because obviously anything that has got a sort of weight will compact your soil under wet conditions as well. We want to promote soil biology. You want to foster good biology in the soil, and you need to maintain crop rotation is important for that. Reducing pesticide use, we'll speak about that just now. These all minimize soil disturbances, and the soil microbes, the growth of soil microbes will be enhanced. Then it's important, of course, to monitor your soil health. You know, if one's moving in a direction where you want to improve your overall soil health, take regular samples, have them tested, have a look at your soil structure. Your soil biology is critical. Have a look at that so that you can see if you're actually gaining traction and if your optimal soil health is being improved. So with these strategies, farmers can gradually improve soil structure over time of degraded agricultural lands. It's not impossible. When one looks at all of these factors and you work at them over time, you will be able to improve your soil structure.
What are the essential macro and micronutrients that plant needs for healthy growth?
Plants require various nutrients. I think most people are aware of that. For the optimal development and growth of one's crop plant, these include macro and micronutrients. Historically, we always used to speak about NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Those were the three macro elements with various functions in the plant, but those were the elements that were required in large quantities for optimal plant growth. Recently, though, they've added a few of these, and that's calcium, magnesium, and sulfur. These are also classified as macro elements these days, and where they used to be micro elements some time ago or intermediate. And then your micro elements, of course, are iron, manganese, zinc, copper, boron, molybdenum, and even chlorine. These micro elements are all essential for optimal plant growth and crop yields. And they all have various functions in the plant, and they're all essential. Mostly, you find that trace elements or your micro elements are actually added or applied as foliar treatments. AECI Plant Health has got various products that have foliar applications and that are very effective and can be absorbed by leaves. So things like copper and boron and zinc and so on are often applied as foliar applications, whereas your macro elements are usually provided in soil where they're taken up by the roots because they're required in larger quantities. These nutrients are all required for optimal plant growth. They should also be tested regularly, as we mentioned earlier about the soil structure. Have a look at your soil, have it tested, look at the chemistry in there, look what's lacking, and all should be added in the correct quantities for optimal plant growth.
How does soil pH and cation exchange capacity influence the availability of these nutrients to plants?
Yes, soil pH is very important for the uptake of elements, of your soil nutrient elements. NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, and all the microelements we spoke of. Even though I said that the microelements are often applied to the leaves, some of them are available in the soil and should be able to be absorbed through the soil. Now, it's interesting that the pH scale, which runs from 1 to 14, with neutral being 7 in the middle, the pH of water, for instance, is 7, which is completely neutral. If we move downwards, in other words, closer to 1, that soil becomes more acidic. And if the pH scale moves upwards towards 14, we talk about an alkaline soil. And nutrient availability depends enormously on the soil pH. And the ideal soil pH is between 6.5 and 7. What does happen often is that soil pH may change, and that means that certain elements, micro and macro elements, will become more available and others may become less available. So you want that optimal pH range. It can even be that some elements can become toxic. If your pH is incorrect, you can have actually toxic elements in the soil, like aluminium. And then another element, a trace element that is extremely sensitive to pH, is boron, where the pH range between toxicity and availability is actually very small. So it's very important to adjust your pH with liming or gypsum, or if you need a more acidic soil, as I said, you could apply elemental sulfur.
Can you explain the difference between organic and inorganic fertilizers and the impact on soil chemistry?
Organic and inorganic fertilizers differ in their composition and their source and their mode of action. They're completely different. Organic fertilizers are things like composts, manure, crop residues, organic waste, and so on. And they tend to release nutrients more slowly. So you don't have this immediate availability because obviously there's a sort of a kind of a breakdown action there. There's a composting action, and you find that slowly these elements are broken down and become available. Organic fertilizers, of course, promote microbial activity as well, which is very important. They provide carbon in the soil. They promote microbial activity because microbes obviously are part of the composting process, and they thrive on organic material in the soil. So organic fertilizers are very good in that way. Often, though, you can't exactly determine the composition of an organic fertilizer. So if you're using, for instance, manure, you will get certain elements out of that, which would include nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, and microelements, as well as organic carbon. But you will not be able to determine exactly how much of each element is in that particular organic fertilizer, unless you've had it tested. Inorganic fertilizers are your granular fertilizers, which are chemically and synthetically produced by industrial processes. They are typically concentrated forms of your nutrients. So you've got your urea, ammonium nitrate, and so on for nitrogen, superphosphate, and potassium chloride. These tend to release more quickly. So you get a more immediate effect if you use an inorganic fertilizer. They apply to the soil, they are immediately available, and they provide immediate nutrition for your plant. Those are the main differences between organic and inorganic fertilizers. The inorganic fertilizers can alter the soil pH and salinity levels, which could be detrimental over a long period of time. So if you're using inorganic fertilizers, they're often salt-based, and that, of course, affects the salinity level, the salt levels of your soil. So one should use these fertilizers prudently and make sure that you only apply what's required. They could also increase the soil pH, which, as we discussed a minute ago, affects the uptake of nutrients from the soil. Inorganic fertilizers is that due to the salinity, they can also affect microbial populations in the soil. Microbial populations, soil biology is critical for the soil balance and to find a healthy soil. So again, don't over-fertilize with inorganic fertilizers because it doesn't have a long-term effect on your soil. In summary, that is the difference between inorganic and organic fertilizers. Organic is perhaps a safer way to go, but slow release, and you can't really determine the composition. Inorganic fertilizers give you an immediate action, and they are the most widely used.
What are some of the best practices for soil testing and interpreting the results to determine appropriate nutrient amendments?
Soil testing is a crucial tool for assessing soil fertility, nutrient status, and so on, and to guide the farmer as to what should be done. I mentioned earlier that this should be done on a regular basis, especially if you're trying to improve your soil in general. You're trying to improve soil health. You need to follow the process and know what's going on. So you need to sample your soil regularly. You need depth of about 6 to 8 inches, so it'd be 15 centimeters or so. Using a clean sampling tool, put the samples in a paper bag and take them to a certified laboratory. And once you have those results, you can interpret them and you can see which elements are lacking in the soil. You'll get a reading for your soil pH. Many labs can tell you how much organic matter is in the soil. And then you adjust your fertilizer program and your organic fertilizer, if you want to, or the cover crops, according to the results of that test. But make sure you go to a certified laboratory, take your samples regularly, and then you manage your process from there. And over time, your soil health will improve, and you will see the result with your yields of your crops.
What are the different types of beneficial soil organisms and their roles in maintaining a healthy soil ecosystem?
A healthy soil ecosystem is teeming with organisms. You know, one doesn't actually realize how much life there is in soil for various purposes. They nutrient recycling, pest regulation even. So if we start with the microbes, the first one we'll talk about is bacteria. And I think we all know what bacteria are. They're different types in the soil. The first ones are the nitrogen fixers, such as the rhizobium and Sotobacter, which fix nitrogen for the plant, which live in the roots symbiotically with the plant and actually make the nitrogen available for legumes. We find those mainly in legumes. Decomposing bacteria help break down organic matter into simpler compounds. It's also bacteria. Nitrifying bacteria also convert ammonium into nitrate, which is a more absorbable form. And pathogen antagonists, which means fungi or bacteria in this case, that actually protect the plant against other pathogenic organisms, so other pathogenic bacteria. Then we find fungi. We've got a very important group of fungi called mycorrhizae, which actually live symbiotically with the plant roots and work as an extension of the plant's own root system, also absorbing moisture and nutrients for the plant from the soil. Again, we've got the decomposers, like we did with the bacteria as well. Penicillin is an example of that. And we've got the pathogen antagonists. So some fungi like Trichoderma and Cleocladium can actually fight off fungal pathogens like Fusarium, which is a well-known soil pathogen. Nematodes in the soil, usually these are a problem, but they're also considered microbial, and many of them are pests, and they cause trouble in agriculture. But those are all part of the soil biology balance.
How do agricultural practices like pesticide use and monoculture cropping impact soil biodiversity?
Agricultural practices and the use of pesticides, of course, can have a dramatic impact on soil biology. The first one would be direct toxicity. So if we use pesticides, insecticides, obviously fungicides, which we could kill, reduce the population of beneficial fungi in the soil, herbicides and so on, could damage your soil biology if not applied correctly. It's very important to apply them correctly by simply direct toxicity to the organisms. You could find that you get a reduction in microbial diversity because certain species or certain types of microbes are then destroyed, and you get an imbalance of microbes in the soil. The soil is a very balanced environment in all ways, in the chemical and biological especially, but it's a very balanced ecosystem, and one doesn't want to disturb that balance if you can help it. Disruption of food chains is also an important factor. You can find that pesticides can disrupt the food webs in the soil, and that's also not beneficial for the soil, and you find bacteria and fungi and protozoa numbers become out of sync with one another. And then, of course, important, which is something that's really come under the magnifying glass lately, is the development of pesticide resistance. So if you continue indiscriminately using a pesticide to fight off a pathogen, you could find that you get pesticide resistance and your pesticide is no longer effective. So you need to look very, very carefully that you use these chemicals prudently and at the right dosage rates as it's indicated on the label so that we don't get pesticide resistance. Monoculture cropping is also a way that agricultural practices can reduce microbial populations in the soil because you've got the loss of habitat diversity. Monoculture cropping continuously benefits certain soil organisms and not others, so you get an imbalance and you get a lack of habitat there. Nutrient imbalances in the soil and soil degradation is also a method that is not beneficial for soil biology. And then, of course, the disruption of symbiotic relationships. So some soils may have mycorrhizal fungi, which form symbiotic relationships with the plant roots and so on. And monoculture cropping could disrupt these relationships and cause your soil to be out of sync biologically.
And what are some strategies for promoting beneficial soil biology and encouraging a diverse microbial community?
Promoting beneficial soil biology and encouraging a diverse population in the soil is very important. Some of the strategies that can be used to achieve this are reduced tillage, crop rotation and diversification, cover cropping, of course. You can add organic amendments. We spoke about that earlier on. Organic material serves as nutrition for microbes. Compost, manure, and so on. So you could add organic material. You can incorporate crop residues. You just plow in your old crop residues from the previous year. That serves as nutrition for microbes and builds the numbers as well. You can use microbial inoculants. AECI Plant Health has got a series of products called Biocult. That's exactly what these products are. They are microbial inoculants, which establish on the roots of plants and increase your water absorption and nutrition absorption network together with the roots under the soil. And you can maintain good aeration and soil moisture. That's also important. Microbes and living things require aeration, say it's aerobic organisms, and they require a degree of soil moisture as well. So they will not flourish if the soil is continually dry. Avoid excessive fertilization and pesticide use. We spoke about that. You want to avoid excessive salinity in the soil, and pesticides can be bad for organisms, for microorganisms in the soil. And then, of course, monitor your soil health at all times. As we said earlier, take regular samples, monitor your soil health, make sure that you're getting good soil health and that your microbial populations are climbing in the soil.
Thanks so much, Dr. Andre Soliers, Marketing Manager at AECI Plant Health. Thanks for listening.
Another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.